you kind of get set in this rhythm of life, and then you kind of like, okay, well, what else is there? Is there something more? But it's not until you step outside of that comfort zone and find something that you're not great at, do you sort of become invigorated again.
Welcome to Zestful Aging, where I speak with fascinating people from all over the world, from every walk of life, who will inspire you to live with zest. I'm your host, Nicole Christina, and my mission is to bring you optimism about aging and help you make full use of the new opportunities that only come at this stage of life. To find out more about the podcast, hop on over to zestfulaging.com. And while you're there, sign up for my weekly email newsletter, The Insider, where you will get fun and quirky tidbits about the show and my exploits, including when I went python hunting in Florida and my participation in the National Senior Games. And if you love the podcast, I'd be grateful if you shared it with your friends. Our music is courtesy of Judy Banker, who was a previous guest on the show. Find out more at judybanker.com. And our technical director is Stephen Littweiler. Zestful Aging is all about being adventurous, and that's why I'm planning a once-in-a-lifetime trip to Finland, and I'm inviting you, my listeners. Why Finland? Well, it's been named the happiest country on the planet for the sixth year in a row, and if you like nature and design, you are in for a real thrill. We're going to start out in Helsinki with our private guide and work our way up to Lapland, where we will be treated to the Aurora Borealis and some of the most magnificent nature on the planet. There will be saunas, wildlife, snowshoeing, reindeer sledding, local food, and some of the cleanest water and air on the planet. We will learn what makes Finns so happy and how we can bring some of that back with us. Will it be cold? Yep, that's part of the adventure. The dates are January 22nd, 2024 to January 29th, 2024, and space is extremely limited. Find out all the details on my website, zestfulaging.com. I can't wait to meet you and share this once-in-a-lifetime experience. Well, although we would all like a quick and easy program to attain good mental and physical health, achieving wellness is more of a lifelong journey. Today's guest is a nurse, educator, and wellness practitioner who focuses on sustainable wellness practices, which include finding more joy, developing resilience, and discovering or rediscovering awe. She uses a unique approach, which includes storytelling, to improve how one sees themselves and how they can achieve deep contentment. Welcome to the show, Carrie.
Thank you so much for having me on. I'm excited.
And I just realized I didn't even use your full name.
Oh, that's
so
okay.
Welcome to the show, Carrie Jerozinski.
There you go. I was going to say, well, maybe you're just risk adverse to trying my scary name.
No, no, no. I like a little risk. I wouldn't want to jump out of an airplane,
yeah,
but I would want to do some things that other people think are kind of weird, like going on python hunts in Florida. But that is another story.
Yeah, I think I might jump out of a plane over that. I don't know.
Well, I was with an expert, and I wasn't going to touch the pythons. I was just there to be a lookout.
Okay.
So, anyway,
we'll go with that.
Yeah. So what I love about your approach, Carrie, is it's sustainable, and you are a firm
believer that health is more than just diet and exercise, which, many people hyper-focus on. Can you talk a little bit about what your definition of good health is?
That is a fabulous question. And actually, I demarcate the two. So health, I feel as though it's like a state of being, right? You go to the doctor and you are within their normal limits of metrics, and then you get this label attached as being healthy if you fall within those metrics. But being well really is more of this state of mind, having seeking this positivity, seeking this continuous quality improvement process of yourself on all of these different dimensions. So a classic example is somebody could be healthy, meaning they fall within those parameters, those medical parameters, yet very unwell. So if I have a normal BMI, a normal blood pressure, a normal blood sugar, a normal blood cholesterol, but I'm crying every day, I'm not very well, right? So I think we really, as a society, need to take this big step back and say health is important, right? Those metrics are important. However, they're not the be-all and the end-all. We really need to round everything out to ensure that we are the best iteration of ourselves right now by continuously seeking that quality improvement.
I see, and I'm going to guess that my quality may be different than your quality.
Absolutely. We all have a different benchmark. I am a really social critter, so my social dimension of wellness, I probably is on the robust end, right? But there may be other dimensions of wellness that I kind of have an Achilles heel over. Perhaps maybe my physical dimension of wellness, I have an Achilles heel on that I need to work a little harder in that area as opposed to my social or my emotional dimension of wellness.
And do you think people are pretty aware of their own dimensions or not so much?
That's part of the concept of this book is to illuminate all of the different aspects of wellness in a storytelling fashion. Because I feel as though right now we're sort of stuck in this social media feed of what healthy and well is. And I think we all can agree that that is not probably what normal or realistic behaviors would be, right? And so if we can just take this step back and sort of do a self-check of where we are, we can start to set these goals for ourselves. But before we even get to that spot, we have to have this awakening of what we're telling ourselves. So storytelling is really powerful because, that's how we've imparted wisdom from generation to generation. That's what makes us human. As a faculty person at a college, I can stand up there and talk about data and statistics and the latest journal articles and hash out all of that. But what are students going to take away from that? What are students going to remember from that? They're going to remember the story behind it. So if I can attach some concrete objective data to a story that evokes emotion, that's far more powerful. And once we get to the spot where we can identify the story we are telling ourselves, that is going to lay the foundation for sustainable behavior change.
And I want to talk more about that and just reinforce this idea of the importance of storytelling because we know even in marketing and advertising, this has been done for years now that, buying an apple comes with a story.
Yeah,
Or by,
absolutely.
so like the kind of car you drive, you tell yourself a story. I drive a Subaru, therefore I'm kind of outdoorsy, blah, 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 or, an SUV or whatever, that there's stories surrounding everything. And that's what makes your work, I think, really unique, is you incorporate this whole idea of of storytelling. And I'm wondering if you can give an example of what that might look like for a woman, let's say 45, 50, who is starting to look at some big life changes. Where might the storytelling come in?
Wow, I mean, there's so many different directions that could go. I mean, there's the self-ageism belief story that can start to creep into that person's mind. So it could look like I'm too old to go for a run. My knees are too old. It could look like I have these battle scars on my body from giving birth to children and, sitting at a desk job for the last 20 years. And so the story that is self-perpetuated is that, I'm never going to be physically healthy or
It's all
the,
downhill from here.
yeah, right. Like those self-defeating but also self-fulfilling prophecies. And the sneaky part about this is that a lot of times folks don't even realize that's the mantra that's running through their head, right? So until we have that awakening moment to what we're telling ourselves, we are going to live the self-fulfilling prophecy. So if you're saying, even if it's a whisper in the back of your brain, that you're too old to do this or you're not in good physical condition, so you could never do XYZ, it is self-fulfilling. If you say you can't, you're correct. And if you say you can, you're correct. So first having that awakening is really truly the linchpin in this process. And it takes time. It's not something that you can just sit down and be like, oh, I'm going to listen to myself talk for 10 minutes and oh, I'm positive or oh, I'm negative and let's go on with our day. it's with intentionality that you have to start listening to this and start listening to those whispers. Most often your self-talk is about mundane things like I have to pick up the kids, I have to, prepare for this 3 o'clock meeting, I have to get over to the dry cleaners. But there's also a part of self-talk that you sort of slip into your own storytelling of worrying about future events. So that anxiety of what might happen in the future, like, well, if I say this to my boss, then this might happen. Or if I never get off the couch, then this is going to happen. So there's this forward future looking, worrying about what might happen, that anxiety. And then there's this component of rumination, of looking back in the past of what perhaps, maybe caused this state of wellness or not wellness, or perhaps caused you emotional injury or physical injury. And you sort of ruminate on that and you think to yourself, well, if I would have just done this, then this would have happened. So a lot of times it's not just the mundane things, it's the worrying about future events and the rumination about past events. And sort of tucked in between there are these little, it can be either microaggressions or support for yourself. So you could get out of the shower and look in the mirror and say, yeah, like I still have biceps and I'm 45 and I'm rocking it, right? That's a yeah, go me cheerleader. Or you could get out of the shower and just, sigh and turn away and, feel like you're defeated. So it's those little moments that you have to start keying into because those little microaggressions are also part of the story that you're telling yourself. And again, if you're telling yourself that you're not worth it or you're ugly or you're fat or you're, sad or you're anxious, you start to become those adjectives that you place upon yourself. So instead of saying, if you catch yourself saying, well, I'm an anxious person, I could never go on a python hunt. I'm just too anxious of a person. Instead of putting that adjective to who you are as a human being, perhaps try saying or rephrasing in your head. You don't have to say it out loud or to anyone else, but try rephrasing in your head, hey, you know what? I'm a person. I'm strong. I've been through some things. Some things make me anxious and nervous, but perhaps I could try this to break outside of my comfort zone. So
I'm
that
hearing
is a,
some self-compassion sneaking in
absolutely.
Here.
Yes, absolutely. So if you can create that space for self-compassion, you can also create that space for opportunity to grow and learn. Before my daughter joined AmeriCorps, and she's out of state on her own adulting, and right before she left, she said, you know, maybe I should just stay home, because she was scared, right? And one piece of advice that I offered her was, growth and learning do not occur when you're safe, right? When you don't put yourself out there to the world, you know, you have to kind of be uncomfortable a little bit to have the opportunity to learn and grow.
That is really, I found that to be very true. And if your expectation is that trying new things is just going to be so easy and effortless, it's going to be disappointing. And I have women who are in my therapy practice who are at that funny in between stage, the 45 to 65, saying, I don't know what the next step is for me. And when we talk about what the possibilities are, oh no, that's just too scary. I don't know those people. I can't, you know, do that. And the idea that, yes, it is scary. And how do we do it anyway?
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. And again, it's providing that space for opportunity and growth. And I'm not saying you have to go out and do, you know, jump out of the airplane. I'm not saying that. But sometimes you have to take that first baby step to put yourself in an uncomfortable spot where you're not great at something. And so I land in that category, that 45 plus category. And I'm to the point in my career and my life and who I am that I'm pretty comfortable. And you kind of get set in this rhythm of life. And then you kind of like, okay, well, what else is there? Is there something more? But it's not until you step outside of that comfort zone and find something that you're not great at, do you sort of become invigorated again. So this last summer, I'm not a strength person, right? I enjoy cardio. I enjoy hiking. I enjoy being outdoors. Mm-hmm. But in terms of strength training, I'm not all that excited about it. So I decided to take boxing lessons.
Oh, I love it.
So here I am, you know, in that 45 plus range, and this,
you know,
young guy is teaching me how to box.
I've seen your photo, and you're a girl.
Yeah.
You don't look like a boxer, Carrie.
I don't have the eye of the tiger. I'm just saying that. So was I outside of my comfort zone? Heck yeah. Did I know what I was doing? Absolutely not. But I would walk away from those sessions like, I'm super proud of myself. I was scared to step into that boxing ring. I don't know what I'm doing. I feel completely uncoordinated because who knew you needed coordination to box, right?
Oh, and there's this whole little dancing thing, right?
Yes,
there's the light on your feet thing.
I know. And yeah, so, but every session that I walked away from that, I'm like, okay, not only did I have the strength benefits, but I had the benefit to step outside of my comfort zone in a safe manner.
Right.
And explore something new that just reinvigorated joy for life. And I made new neural pathways in doing so. And, you know, there was just so much greatness that came from that 30 minutes twice a week. I mean, it was just fabulous. Right.
I love that word, invigorating.
Yeah.
And that's what many of us are searching for as we, you know, launch our kids, maybe stay or not stay with our partners, maybe look at kind of wrapping up our work or the work we're doing now. And then it's like, where's the juice?
Yeah, making life more meaningful because, again, at this stage, you're probably a little bit more on the comfortable side. Do you have to go out there and, you know, sell yourself or, you know, take chances or take risks? Do you have to? Probably not at this age. However, you know, when think about the last time you characterized something you did as invigorating or powerfully joyful. It probably is associated with something that was a difficult task. It
I
was, you
love
know,
that.
doing a difficult hike or trying something new or even something emotionally difficult, like being susceptible and brave and putting your feelings out there for another person to hear. I mean, there's so many different ways that you can step outside of that stream. And
And the
just,
your vulnerability is
yeah,
where we are.
absolutely, absolutely.
Hi, everyone. Have you listened to my interviews with Dr. Bill Rawls? He's been on the show twice, and after I read his book on cellular health and learned about his high standards for quality control, I was sold. I placed an order for Vital Plant supplements immediately. And I encourage you to learn about his work by hopping over to vitalplan.com. If you enter Zestful15, they will give you 15% off your first order. I'm excited for you to try these products. I think you're going to be very impressed. Now back to the show. You know, it's funny you were talking about your positive experience boxing. It can also go the other way. A friend of mine invited me, I'm a knitter, and she invited me to this felting class where you basically, do you know about this? The felting,
I do
they
not.
do it in Iceland and other Nordic countries. So basically, you take some roving, some wool that hasn't yet been made into yarn, and you take a needle that has a little, it's very sharp, and you basically stab it into submission until it makes a shape. And these things can be the most beautiful art forms. I mean, people make these gnomes and the elves and the characters. I mean, they are absolutely beautiful. I'm telling you, I thought, are you serious? This is what I'm doing. I'm taking this needle and I'm just stabbing it to change the density so I can shape it. I thought this is like the most boring thing I've ever done. I'd rather be, I don't know what else would be boring. And so, you know, that's something that I thought, hey, I've never done that. I tend to be crafty. I love yarn, love wool. I'm never doing that again. And so was it, you know, I didn't risk a huge amount. It was a morning class. I got to meet some new people, but I know that I'm not going to be a felter. And so lesson learned, let's try something else.
Absolutely. So you grew, you learned something, not just about how to pulverize wool, but you also made connection and like community connection with other people. You were social. That was fabulous. But the bright part of this that you just described was that you were able to see the silver lining. You embraced a growth mindset. So even though we try things and sometimes we stumble and sometimes we fumble, if you can just stop and look at, okay, what good came out of this situation? And maybe the good was, you know, I had a great hair day when I was there. I mean, it could be something very simple. But if you can switch your mindset to be one of growth and positivity as opposed to, ugh, I wasted an hour of my life. I poked my finger with a
Yes,
needle.
I did. Multiple times.
But you didn't share that in your story. And that is a critical difference between someone that has positive health outcomes and a robust wellness, the dimensions of wellness versus someone that has poorer health outcomes and is not so well. It's that critical piece of being able to flip the switch. You are telling me the story right now, but you probably, after that event, went home and were thinking about it in your head, like, oh, this went wrong, but this was good. So even what you are telling yourself right after that event, without sharing it with the world right now on your podcast, you were able to flip that switch. And that's where the story begins.
Well, so, I have a very new, I mean, these little creatures or these little guys are very expensive. And when I was in Iceland, I thought, I'd like to buy one of these little guys, but they were very, and now I know why.
Yeah.
It takes forever to do this. And so there was an appreciation for the craft and the skill of it, which I hadn't. You know, I hadn't known about. I'm
right.
wondering where gratitude fits into this, Carrie. You're talking about growth mindset and silver lining.
Absolutely. I mean, we know that folks that have a gratitude practice and a gratitude, just attitude towards life, again, has healthier outcomes. And, you know, is that because, well, if you're a grateful person, you're using the thank you language, you're typically engaging more with others. So, you know, I like to use the example of, If you're helping someone in the hallway find the room that they need to be in, and that means you show up late to your own meeting, when you walk into the meeting using that thank you language, so thank you for waiting for me, I was helping someone, as opposed to saying, I'm so sorry I'm late. So again, a little switch like that really can work towards evolving a gratitude practice. So when you start to embrace this language and this attitude, people are probably going to gravitate more towards you, meaning you're probably going to have a stronger emotional and social dimension of wellness because you're going to have more folks with the same positive mindset surrounding you. Emotions are infectious, which you very well know, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. If you hang around with people mm-hmm. that are grateful and positive and look for that silver lining, you are more apt to do the same. Mm-hmm. If you hang around folks that are like, oh, I poked my finger on the needle. Oh, I had to help this person and they made me late. you know, things like that. Mm-hmm. You're going to tend to look towards the negative as well. So being grateful also helps support that mindfulness component. What do you have right here, right now that you can be grateful for? So, you know, even something as simple as waking up in the morning and thinking to yourself, I am so grateful that my furnace works when it's 20 below out. I am
real story.
Real truth right now. I am so thankful that I have flannel sheets on my bed. You know, when we talk about a gratitude practice, a lot of people immediately think, oh, I'm thankful for my family. I'm thankful for my partner, all these big things. But can you take tiny little moments throughout your day and just be thankful that you're comfortable? Be thankful that your feet don't hurt. Be thankful that, you know, you're not in a hospital right now on oxygen. You know, those types of things that really can support your generalized health and well-being across the lifespan and impact your health span. So meaning not only are you going to add years to your life, but you're also going to add quality to your life throughout your years.
What is your day like, Carrie, in terms of, I know you're not a perfect human. What are, like, as you go through your day, are there challenges for you in terms of, you know, I really want to take a hike, but it's 20 below. What should I do instead? I mean, where do you have to navigate some of the I was going to make up a word, uphillness of, you know, of not being on the couch with Netflix.
Yeah, and that is really hard when you live in Wisconsin and it is 20 below out. But, you know, everyone is human. Everyone has their own Achilles heel, and I definitely have those in my life. One of the things that I share about in my book is, I just absolutely adore chocolate and gooey, caramely, nutty kind of sweets, things like that. And so Christmas time is really hard for me because people in human society, we show love and affection with food. When it's Christmas time, we exchange Christmas cookies, or people will drop off cashew brittle or fudge. When it's birthdays, we have cakes. When someone passes away, we bring over a casserole. We really we demonstrate affection through feeding people, and most often that is not with like broccoli and cauliflower.
Roasted veggies.
Which I love.
But there's a little balsamic glaze. Enjoy.
Right. So I have been struggling with having some of those goodies in my pantry, and there's some little micro interventions that I do, like, okay, I am gonna roast a big old pan of broccoli and cauliflower, and that's gonna be my dinner, because I know darn well I'm gonna have some of that cashew brittle that's calling my name in my pantry. Or I take half of it and I give it away to someone else. So little tricks like that. I do, I struggle just like everybody else. One of the stories that I share in my book is that I have a meditation practice, a daily meditation practice, and it's benefited me in every dimension of wellness tenfold. I mean, just taking 10 minutes a day to do this over the last several years, 4 years, 4 or 5 years, really has just, I have reaped so many rewards from this. And so one of my goals was to sit for 365 days straight. And
Wow.
that takes a lot of intentionality. And because I've had so many great rewards from this, I mean, it's great, right? I want to do this. It's not like it's a burden to do this. Well, I had a busy day, and I missed that. And I was pretty devastated. But I have to say, because of my meditation practice, I was able to rebound from that so much more quickly than, 5 years ago, by missing a goal. So I was able to use that self-compassion practice to identify common humanity. This is a mistake. I made a mistake. Everybody makes mistakes. I'm fallible. It happens, and it's okay. What can I learn from this? So growth mindset. Okay, I've learned that I have reaped many rewards from this, and that I want to continue to do it. So why don't I reset another goal to continue to work on my practice?
There's a
And
kindness there and a gentleness there. You're not
yeah.
saying, oh, here we go. You made
Yes.
it this far. Now you got to start over.
Right.
I can hear there's like a problem solving, not a
Yeah.
judgment.
So, and I think this is where a lot of folks get stuck, because they've had goals and they've tried to achieve those goals, and for one reason or another, the goals have gone by the wayside. And so you sort of, again, get into this self-defeating prophecy of, I've tried that. I've been there. I've done that. Why would I try it again? I'm just setting myself up for misery because I'm gonna fail again. You get into this mindset. It's sort of like, oh, I ate the bag of Doritos while I was sitting on the couch watching Netflix. So, well, now I may as well just go get all those
That's
Christmas cookies.
right. It's the what the hell, and I see that a lot in treating eating disorder folks.
Right. So, it's again like checking yourself. Okay, I stumbled. It's okay. I can rebound from this. And how can I rebound from this? And making a new goal that maybe fits into my life a little bit better. So I did. So I rebooted and I made a different goal that allowed me to have a couple of missed days here and there. And it turned out beautifully. I mean, in the book, I describe the achievement of that second goal, and it was just absolutely spectacular and fabulous, and I would not have traded it for the world. So in missing, in my quote unquote error, I gave myself an even more beautiful gift in the end. So trying to just not beat yourself up And in the book, I go through like all of these stage setting activities of how you can support your success in sustainable behavior change. So paying attention to those activities before you even start the change. Like there is a lot to behavior change that most folks are not aware of. And once you just explain it to people, you're like, oh yeah, that makes sense. I get it. And yeah, I can do those things to help support my behavior change instead of being reactive to, oh, the doctor said I have high blood pressure and now I have to, you know, lose weight and cut out sodium and do this. And you can probably do that for 2 weeks, but it's not going to be sustainable. So, yeah.
So that's what you're terming micro intervention, where you're making sustainable, doable mini goals.
Right. So micro interventions are the building blocks to meet your goals. So let's say your goal is to be able to walk a 5K in May. And you live in Wisconsin, it is 20 below. So how can we break that up to make sure that we are achieving these smaller goals to lead to the bigger goal? Because in turn, every smaller goal that we accomplish and make sustainable in our daily life, we're building our self-efficacy. And our self-efficacy just basically means we have belief in ourselves to achieve our goal. So the more you can cheerlead and prove to yourself that you can make these changes in life, the more likely you are to achieve that broader goal. So if I want to walk the 5K by May, maybe it means that I'm going to start just walking to the end of my block and back 3 times a day because I'm completely sedentary and sitting on my couch watching Netflix. Mm-hmm. So if I can prove to myself that 3 times a day, most days of the week, I can walk to the end of the block and back and do that for 2, 3, 4 weeks, I can prove to myself that I can do this. I did achieve this, and I'm going to feel good about that achievement. So now what can I add on to that? Maybe I can add on to, I'm going to go investigate at the Y a membership. So maybe I can go to the Y and walk on the treadmill when it is 20 below out. And I'm only going to walk on that treadmill for 15 minutes, you know, like, because that's all I can handle right now. And that's all my life can handle because I'm super busy. Well, you know what? You make that goal. I'm going to walk on the treadmill at the YMCA for 15 minutes 3 times a week when I'm done with work or before I go to work or on my lunch break, whatever the case is that will fit into your life. So you start doing these micro interventions that just slowly snowball and build upon themselves until you're able to reach that goal.
It seems like the timing would be perfect for after the holidays for people saying, I'm never eating sugar or white flour again, you know, and yes. All of that. And then, you know, 6 weeks, 4 or 6 weeks later, you know, that it's just not sustainable. And it's kind of cruel to ourselves to set us up for that.
Absolutely. And I see this so often in healthcare is people have these knee-jerk reactions because, you know, maybe their provider told them they have high blood pressure or they now have to go on oral anti-diabetics because of a continuously high blood sugar or, you know, something like that that really jostles a person and says, wow, you know, I only have 40 more years left of life. I want those years to be healthy and well. I want to be able to play with my grandchildren on the floor without pain. I want to, you know, all of these great things that we want in life. And so there's this knee-jerk reaction. And unfortunately, a lot of times it's unsustainable goals that have been created. And then again, you feel bad about yourself. You feel self-shame. You feel like you sat down and ate that bag of Doritos and what the heck, I'm just going to continue on with another bag of Doritos now.
And feeling like a loser, which is, you know, has a ripple effect on everything.
Yeah. And you know, when you do stumble like that, it's hard. Like I literally just stumbled yesterday with one of my goals and I struggled with it throughout the day. And I'm out loud telling myself, common humanity, you know, things happen. It's okay. It's not the end of the world. This is an opportunity for continued growth. But it still took me a day to reboot and to really really honestly not just verbalize the silver lining, but to embrace that silver lining and to get better in my headspace to be like, okay, it's a new day. Come on, let's go. I got this.
And to forgive yourself.
Yes, yes, that's huge. Oh, that's so huge. That forgiveness piece, I think, is, you know, something that when you talk about behavior change, do you really think about forgiveness, like self-forgiveness or forgiveness of others? No, you don't. But it's huge. It's a huge component of it. Mm-hmm. And I go through that in my book, too. Like, if you don't feel like you are worthy of your own forgiveness, then how can you feel worthy of bettering yourself in some sort of behavior change? Like, you really have to get down to the root of. And don't get me wrong, self-forgiveness and forgiveness of others sometimes takes years or decades. It's a really long process. But just like being consciously aware of that, that you are worthy of that forgiveness. You may not be ready to forgive right now, but you are worthy of that forgiveness, and you are worthy to be the best iteration of yourself that you can possibly be. So changing that headspace and looking at that self-forgiveness, not just for the little minor stumble for a goal you may have set, but you know, maybe there's a lot of folks out there that have gone through some big traumas in life. And you know, that's best dealt with a therapist and worked through one-on-one with a therapist and having those other goals to work on. But just acknowledging that in your behavior change story that you tell yourself, that you are okay, you are worthy, and you should strive to be the best iteration that you can be because of that.
And, you know, it's interesting because we can say it and you and I can agree, but the research is really clear that if you want to make behavior change, you've got to figure out a way to come to terms with the fact that you are going to stumble. Yeah. And, you know, Kristen Neff talks about that.
Absolutely.
Is that self-compassion is the only way forward.
Yeah.
Because the other just doesn't even work. It sounds like it might work. Like, just, you know, kick yourself in the butt. And, you know, it sounds like, oh, well, maybe that's what I need. But we know that in the long term, that doesn't get us where we want to go.
No, not at all. And, you know, same going back to that example of you go to your provider and they tell you, you know, you have this diagnosis or whatever, that impact may have a short-term bump in behavior change, right? Like that 6 weeks of, oh, I got rid of my white flour and my sugar in my house. But it's not sustainable. So it's sort of like when a child brings home an exam that was not great, you know, maybe a failing exam. If the parent takes the stance of shame, like, why didn't you study harder? Well, this is your fault, versus one of, okay, so what were the conditions? You know, how were you studying? How can we help you study better? Like, could you maybe use help from a tutor? Was the testing location loud or disruptive? You know, things like that. So you have two different scenarios there. If you investigate that root cause and show love and support and kindness and teach common humanity to that child that you stumbled, but it's okay, what did you learn and how can you grow from this? Then the next test and subsequent tests after that probably will yield better results. If you use the shaming example with that child, you probably will get a better test score on the next test or two, but it's not going to be sustainable because they're feeling bad about themselves. They're feeling shameful. They're feeling unworthy. They're feeling like they can't meet expectations. So why even bother? You know, so we do know for sure that, you know, if you're coming from a space of shame, whether that's intrinsic or extrinsic, it's probably not going to yield sustainable results, versus if you're coming from a space of compassion and common humanity and all of those wonderful things that Kristen Neff teaches to the world, then you more than likely will be able to have that sustainable change.
I like this idea of sort of problem solving it's short of self-compassion. If we could just problem solve in a neutral way, that might be a first step to say, okay, why didn't this work out? Let me think about the conditions, you know, all of this stuff. That's a step beyond being punitive and self-punishing. And then as you talk about small steps, then we can work towards self-compassion, because for many people, and I know you know this, is that's a really big leap.
It's a
You know,
huge leap.
they're like, what are you talking about? What
I
am I
know.
supposed to do?
I talk about this at conferences all the time in terms of like post-secondary students, because a lot of students come with this belief in, that they are bad at math, or that they can't study, or they can't take tests, or fill in the blank, right? They just come with this innate, ingrained belief based on what has happened to them in their past educational experiences. So how can we break through that belief and work on switching that to a growth mindset? Can you learn math? Absolutely, you can learn math. We might just need to figure out some different modalities of how you learn math, but you can absolutely learn math. You are here, you're okay, you are in a safe environment. What can we do to figure out how to get you to point B, point C, point D, et cetera?
And you may not be a mathematician, but it's different than hanging your head about, like, I'm a math dummy, which is what I do
Yeah, there's a big difference between saying I'm not the best at math, hands raised, but I do have the capacity to learn math, right? And in that scenario with the child, I use like coaching questions, right? Like, what were the conditions and how might it be different if we did X, Y, and Z? But you can really do that with yourself internally also. So if you do stumble or fumble, you don't meet your goal, something happens at work, you lose your temper with your child, whatever the case may be, can you go through those questions, those like coaching leading questions, problem-solving questions in your head by yourself? Can you say to yourself, well, you know, what were the conditions leading up to my stumble at work? And, you know, what might have gone differently if I would have chosen this path instead of that path? And that's great and problem solve, but just make sure you don't get stuck in that ruminating pattern of, well, if I would have done this, I could have done that. You know?
Really helpful. Carrie, where can people find out more about your work?
Well, you can go to my website at boldcontentment.com. Or you can follow me on social media on Facebook or Instagram at Bold Contentment as well. Just note that I have firm boundaries in my social media. I don't allow like push notifications on my phone for my social media accounts because I want to be able to check my social media when I want to, not when my phone tells me to.
For sure.
And so I mean I check it twice a day usually, but be patient if you do send me a message. And you can also find me and my book on Amazon if you just put into the search bar my name, Carrie Jaroszynski, and I know it's very hard, but that's probably going to be in your notes for the podcast, I would imagine. Yeah, and they can find my book that way. You can also find my book on my website. I have a link there. And I also just wanted to mention that I love talking to people about this stuff, just having conversations. And I actually have a link on my website where if you have a book club and you decide to read my book, I would love to join you for a few minutes on Zoom just to
Oh,
do a little
wow.
Q&A on that and
What a
just to
great
talk about
idea.
being well. So,
That's lovely.
yeah, it's
Thank
fun.
you so much for spending time with me today and talking about, you know, the reality of attaining good health and that it's much more complex than, you know, not eating Doritos and how we can think about it differently. I
And I
really,
was picking on Doritos. I like Doritos, don't get me wrong. Everything in moderation.
I understand. I totally understand.
Well, thank you for having me. This was so much fun.
Thank you so much for joining us on Zestful Aging. If you like the podcast, please share it with some of your friends. If you think decluttering could help you feel better and you could use a little assistance with that, check out the online course I've developed with professional organizer and designer Carrie Luteran. It's called Too Much Stuff.
And too much stuff is different from other courses or articles or guidance you may have used up. We give you clear steps to deal with the clutter and the tools to help you face the overwhelming feelings and the emotions that come up when we're going through our clutter. And a lot of those emotions are just feeling anxious or guilty or just basically flooded with a lot of different confusing feelings. The course is really practical. It's realistic. The lessons are short and punchy, and they're really manageable. We're not trying to set you up for some long exploratory, you know, super in-depth, burdensome experience. We want something really helpful for you right now. We all need help with our anxiety. So being surrounded by more calm and less chaos can really help. So now's a good time to clear out the clutter so we can focus on what's really important in our lives. So find out more at zestfulaging.com. You'll see more about this under the web courses tab. If you have any questions, just shoot me an email at zestfulaging@gmail.com. Thanks so much. And stay tuned next week for another interview with a fascinating and inspiring guest.